Welcome to Social Workers Break Room. This is Imelda.
And I'm Jennifer.
And today we bring you
Travel Social Work, how to see and serve across the country. New cities, great money, high risk, high reward.
Okay, let's do it. Stay with us. So travel social work is definitely one of our most requested topics, and it is an interesting and different aspect of social work.
Yeah, absolutely. And while we can definitely see why so many are interested, because the money can be good and a lot of people like the change of location and opportunity to see new places, there are a lot of things to consider. So the first thing we'll unpack is the different kinds of assignments. So by far the most popular is going to be inpatient medical. So this is working in a medical hospital setting. Usually, social workers are discharge planners or case managers in medical hospital. So in this role, your primary responsibility is when people no longer need to be in a medical hospital with around-the-clock doctor care, that the social worker gets them to their next setting with everything they need. So this could be things like an oxygen concentrator and going home with home health. This could be to a skilled nursing facility and you need to order IV antibiotics. This could be to an acute rehab with a wound vacuum, etc. So as a result, usually need a good amount of discharge planning experience. Usually a lot of recruiters or placements will require at least 2 years, which we'll unpack later. Mm-hmm. Occasionally, you'll also see some outpatient medical postings, but those are very few and far between, as well as you might see some emergency department social work positions. So these are also discharge planning focused, but you need to work different shifts, discharge plan much faster, and oftentimes you need to have the licensure to do a psychiatric assessment. You also need to be prepared to work in true emergencies. The way I did social work looked very different when I was working with a family bleeding out from a car accident than when I was helping people who had a knee surgery discharge home. So knowing what you can handle and what you're okay with, I've seen a number of social workers pass out in the emergency department bay, which is not great because then we have another patient. Uh-huh. So knowing what assignments are going to work for you. You can also definitely find some inpatient and outpatient psychiatric or behavioral health positions. Inpatient psych would be to work in a psych hospital typically. So these are often the patients in this hospital are people who are often in danger to themselves, others, or who are experiencing a mental health crisis like schizophrenia or aggressive dementia, where they can no longer keep themselves or others safe without a completely safe environment and around-the-clock care. So inpatient psych social workers are responsible for a lot more than medical ones because on top of the discharge planning that we just discussed, you're also writing the treatment plan, doing a much more in-depth psychosocial assessment, and you're delivering a good bulk of the treatment, often in group format. And as we mentioned before, Imelda and I actually worked together in a psych hospital before. So what else did you notice about working in a psych hospital, Imelda?
Well, my position was a PRN, social worker, so I was not there every single day. I was there on the weekends, and usually the bulk of my work involved whatever extra work the full-time social workers during the week were not able to get done because of, you know, the magnitude of the work. Or I had to do some discharge during the weekend for some patients that were heading out to, you know, to other placements or with their families during the weekend. So my position was more of making sure that things were not falling through the cracks during the time when the full-time social worker was not there, usually in the weekends or evenings. Mm-hmm. But it was a great learning experience, I will say. This was actually my first time working with adults. Mm. My experience before that had been working with, I had worked with adults, but more in the child family, you know, setting. Mm. So working with the family as a whole, not just with adults one-on-one. And I loved it. I feel like, especially the folks that I worked with were older patients, and they have great stories, I feel like. But I truly enjoy my work there because I was able to not only connect with the patients and being able to to really create a treatment plan or discharge plan that met their needs and the needs of their families, but also connect with other social workers who were there on the weekends, the nurses and the other staff who were just, you know, they're supporting the patients. We did a lot of stuff different. I think some of the most challenging things were finding housing mm-hmm. placement for, especially for adults who didn't have family or any other natural support. So as always, as you know, housing is probably one of the resources that is needed and in any social work setting, especially when you're discharging someone from a psych hospital and trying to find them a safe place to go to. But I also enjoy working with the nurses and chatting about the different cases. And I think during the times when I was there during the week, I was able to attend some of the staff meetings,
treatment teams,
yes, with the medical providers and doctors, and you know, being able to just share information about observations with specific clients, especially those that either needed to extend their stay or weren't ready for this charge, and what the plan was for them to exit the psych hospital with their families or whatnot. It's not for everyone, definitely. Mm-hmm. you see a lot of behaviors. You might think that you create a good relationship with someone, and then the next day you come back and they don't remember who you are, and then you have to start all over again. And so, but it was a rewarding experience. Definitely enjoyed being there, learning and connecting with that population. It's tough work.
It is.
But it's rewarding. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really hard. Mm-hmm. And that's, you bring up a good point too about populations within a setting too, right? So do you want to work in a geropsych hospital? Would you be okay working on the adolescent unit of an acute rehab? You know, who are the people who also bring you joy mm-hmm. when you take on these assignments? So both medical hospitals and psych hospitals can be a lot of work, and it is a lot to be responsible for if you've never done it before. So, which brings us to our next topic of what you need to do to get started in travel social work. So our advice is not the end all be all. There are people who get assignments without experience, and that can be good, but we want to caution it for a number of reasons. So the recommended experience to get started in traveling is 2 years and a license. So we'll focus on medical again, since it's the most common. So this would ideally be 2 years of full-time discharge planning experience in an inpatient medical hospital. But before that, as many of you know, to get that job in a medical hospital is a CMS requirement. You often need to get your LMSW or your LSW or whatever the equivalent is in your state. So that should be your first step. Again, it doesn't mean that you can't get an assignment without one, but in order to be the most marketable, most successful, get the most money for your assignments, you should start with getting a license. Many hospitals will also require or request someone who is licensed in that state where the hospital is. So if there's a place that you always want to go on assignment, it wouldn't be a bad idea to get licensed there. So for example, I'm licensed in New York, and during the pandemic, over and over again, I saw travel positions that were open for New York. But by the time that they had taken down the waiver to use an out-of-state license, they were saying, hey, you can come and you can travel here and help us out, but you have to have at least a New York LMSW or we're not taking you anymore. So again, once you pass the ASWB master's exam once, that's the only time you need to take it for the whole country. So get that done as soon as possible. You won't regret having your license. Next, let's unpack the experience part. So ideally, most hospitals want you to have 2 years full-time experience discharge planning. Again, some hospitals will waive this, but most are more likely to take you if you have at least PRN or as-needed experience. When you travel on a contract, you're expected to know how to do things independently from the get-go. So if you're on a 13-week contract, they're not going to put you in 3 weeks of training. You'll often be incredibly lucky if you get a day or two to just shadow. So that means you need to be ready to do something by yourself. You know, for example, a doctor just paid you to do an assessment on RIM 13 and get him to a nursing home with oxygen transport and IV antibiotics by 1 p.m. at the latest because they need the bed for someone else who's getting out of surgery. If you can look me in the eye and tell me that despite some small variations in protocol and EMR, you could do that, you're probably ready to travel. if you're like, holy crap, I don't know what goes into an assessment. I've never ordered any of those things before. I don't know what a packet looks like. I have no idea how I would communicate with places in the area. I have never had to have a hard conversation with a doctor like that before where I've said, no, it's impossible. I've never had to communicate with the transport staff about the people coming in and out or any of the things that would go into that. I've never charted on any of these things. I've only used one EMR and it was specific to my agency. That's another thing. If you have EMRs and you're going to start traveling, you need to list them all in your resume. They want to know which ones have you used, which ones are you proficient in, which ones are you an expert level user in, et cetera. If you've never done an assessment in a medical hospital, if you've never set up that transport, if you've never done a prior auth or utilization management to get someone into a skilled nursing facility, if you've never put in a packet together for someone to discharge, if you've never coordinated IV antibiotics, and if you've never had to, again, push back on a doctor or nurse for paperwork, signatures, prescriptions you need, you're not ready to travel. Mm-hmm. You need to be able to do all those things independently. One of the things that is worth bringing up here is the cases that have come up recently around nurses. And the ones that have gotten the most press and publicity, they weren't travel nurses. Mm. But in both cases, they were relatively new nurses to the field. And they didn't know what good protocol could have looked like. They didn't know how to double check something. The systems were set up so that they could fail. But if you don't even know what to look for to protect yourself because you've never done something before, you are putting yourself in a world of danger with your license and for the people that you serve. Again, maybe we are not always in the same kind of life-threatening situations that nurses or doctors or other medical professionals are. But if you send the wrong person to the wrong facility, if you fax over the wrong prescription, if you don't give somebody the IV antibiotics arriving at the right time when they go home, if you miss the wound vac, if the oxygen concentrator can't handle high enough liters to keep somebody safe when they sleep at night, mm-hmm. you can cause someone serious harm.
Right.
And if you've never been in a workplace setting where you have been supported and coached and supervised in a way that has given you those skills, going to a new place with no support, who's often understaffed and that's why you're there, is not the place to try and learn at the fly. Again, because especially in those inpatient settings, both medical and psych, someone's life in a lot of ways and their safety and well-being, both while they're in your care and at home, are in your hands. So we can't emphasize the experience part a lot. So again, you know, think about why they're hiring a travel social worker. They're not bringing you in because they think it's cool and they want to spend more money. It's usually because they're desperately understaffed and can't find anyone to work. So this can mean that you walk into unsafe conditions for your license and have no one to orient or support you. I have run around medical units and emergency departments for years of experience. And if somebody tells me to do something or not do something, I know exactly why I should or shouldn't. And my license is more important than any money or anybody liking me. Mm-hmm. And when you haven't even interned in a hospital before and don't even have a license, don't think that that protects you. This isn't legal advice, but from all the board sanctions I've read, it would be better to have a license and get a remediation plan because you made a mistake than have a cease and desist that you cannot ever apply for a license because what you did was so dangerous and showed bad judgment. Wow. For example, like taking an assignment you weren't prepared for in competency, license, mm-hmm. or experience. So please get some experience. It is safer for you and your patients. If your life depended on good discharge planning in a medical hospital, you would want the social worker who has the experience to catch the mistakes and go the extra mile to make sure that you're safe and can continue to heal, not the one who's chasing the dollar and the chance for a weekend in Chicago, who's never set up a wound vac before, and they don't know that you're missing the foam and that you should have had your dressing changed this morning and been sent with a paper script because your insurance often doesn't get faxes until the following day. You would want the social worker who knows all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So again, 2 years experience, PRN at least, but full-time is better, and a license. You can also make yourself more competitive with more experience, multiple state licenses, an LCSW, or willing to take on assignments that are less common. So things like strangely timed shifts, working in correctional health settings is often one that we don't see people sign up for super willingly. So being a little bit flexible when you're starting too. Another reason that having what recruiters are asking for is important is if you're going to do this full time, you want to have consistent income versus occasionally having a recruiter or an institution take a chance on you. If you have no experience and no license, you could get a contract. You know, congratulations, mm-hmm. and we hope you stay safe. But now that COVID contracts are more far between and hospitals have made improvements to wages and culture in many places, they likely won't be looking for as many travelers. And when they do, they're going to want the best, not the least experienced. Right. So let's say you have the experience. Fabulous. Love to hear it. So what usually happens next is you find an agency or recruiter, and please read the fine print. There are some recruiters or agencies where you may violate their contract when you talk to another agency or recruiter. There are some that don't care, and you could have 6 recruiters and 10 agencies calling you, and that is totally fine. But some of them very specifically want you to stay with them.
How do you find a recruiter for this?
Great question. So we're going to share in the resources for this episode a number of Facebook groups that are well staffed by travel social workers and agencies that seek them out there. There are also a number of large ones. A lot of how some people get started with travel social work too is through local contracts. Mm-hmm. So working at a local hospital on a short-term stint. So knowing who the staffing agencies are in your specific area can also be a great way to get started.
Awesome. Thank you.
So if you're going to travel full-time, you definitely want to find a recruiter you like. Make sure they know all about your experience and what you're willing to do or your boundaries, and make sure that it's an agency that is big enough to support multiple assignments throughout the year. If you're someone who just wants to travel occasionally or only do local contracts, you can just hop into any recruiter's inbox and take it from there. But if you're someone who really wants to dedicate, you know, your life and career to this, you need just as good of a recruiter as you do need, you know, experience, doctors and nurses by your side, all the people on your team who are going to help and support you to make this a reality. So let's talk some details. So most contracts are 13 weeks. It is possible to get shorter or longer contracts, but another 13 is often the standard. And if you're amazing, you'll often have the option to extend that contract. So you should know the following details when considering an assignment. Where it is in what setting. So for example, a Massachusetts skilled nursing position or a Missouri inpatient discharge planner. So know where it is and what it is. What the schedule is. Is it 4-10s? Is it 3-12s? Is it Monday through Friday, 8-5? Do you have to rotate on call while you're there? Are you working all the weekends? Are you working every overnight? So consider what schedule works best for your body, why you travel. For example, if you wanted to meet up with friends in that city, 3-12s on every weekend might not be great if your friends are all working Monday through Friday, 9-5. And how much support you need. If it's your first time working in that setting, overnights where there's less administration available may not be the best shift for you. You may want a day shift where there's at least one other social worker. What is the weekly gross pay and what does that include? So for some assignments, that's just the hourly or weekly pay. For some, that'll include the meal and housing. So your weekly or hourly pay is taxable. Your housing and meals should not be. So if a recruiter tells you your after-tax income take-home pay, run. Recruiters are not tax professionals and they don't know you, your other income, deductions, write-offs. That is a huge red flag when they say guarantee XYZ is going to be hit in your bank account. No. They have no idea. So you're going to need to estimate that for yourself with your tax professional, which by the way, if you're going to travel full-time, you probably need a tax person because mm-hmm. you're now going to be earning income in multiple states. So you have multiple tax filings often to deal with. And someone who sells insurance, unless you're getting insurance from elsewhere, like a spouse, your parents, or a part-time job, mm-hmm. because these 13-week contracts are often not going to come with health insurance. Next thing you should be looking for is what is that housing and meal stipend? So if you're looking at Airbnbs, hotels, and other furnished housing, again, some people try and get really short-term apartments, but if even if you buy furniture and return it, that's not a great plan. So making sure you're looking at furnished places. And is what they're offering for housing and meals enough to cover housing in the area? We see a lot of professionals, especially I know who got contracts in California, who are like, the wage is amazing and this is great, but the only place that they can find a remotely affordable Airbnb was going to be an hour commute to the hospital and back every day. And they strongly regretted taking that assignment. Will you need to stay far away to get cheap housing and then rent a car? And do you have the funds for that? And are you okay with spending your time doing that? You might be. You might decide that the assignment is somewhere in maybe lower San Francisco and you want to stay in the heart of the city and commute in and you're fine with that. Other times it might not be quite a choice. Will the agency pay you to rent that car? A lot of times they say you get yourself on a plane here, you get yourself on a plane back, and how you get to and from where you're sleeping in your hospital is your business. Mm-hmm. So figure it out.
it almost feels like sometimes those that really good pay for these assignments comes also with like that fine print. I was like, well, yeah, you're getting paid this much, but you have to rent an apartment in New York City in Manhattan or something like that, that it's just way too expensive, that most of the additional income that you'll be getting will be going to living expenses.
Exactly. You know, there are some that it's like, oh, well, you get, you know, between your housing, meal stipend and weekly pay, you know, you're going to make $10,000 in a month. And a lot of people would say $10,000, that's amazing. Yeah. So once you take off, if you're a 1099, which you often will be, you are now paying your normal tax bracket and your self-employment tax. So you've lost 35% to taxes. So now maybe you're down closer to $7,000. Mm-hmm. And then you end up renting an Airbnb, which is $1,000 a week times 4 weeks. Now you're down to $3,000. Your plane tickets out there were $500 each way. Now you're down to $2,000. And when you split that up amongst paychecks, you should have just stayed where you were. So making sure you're doing all that math, right? And even in that scenario, we didn't rent a car and we didn't eat anything. We didn't have to spend money on food in this scenario. Mm-hmm. So again, when you're looking at these places to rent, do you need a kitchen or kitchenette? You know, if you're going to be there. I know a lot of travelers who bring their air fryer with them, which I think is so funny, but also so reasonable. If I'm going to be somewhere for 13 weeks.
The coffee maker, the air fryer.
Exactly. Like, I don't want to eat just microwave stuff or just takeout. It's too expensive and I'll get sick of it. So people often bring small appliances with them. A lot of people bring a crock pot, throw something in before they go to work, and then it's ready when they're done. So figuring out what works for you and if it's going to be enough money. Speaking of, you know, will the agency pay you to rent a car? Can you submit to them directly for mileage reimbursement, or will you need to wait for tax season? Mm-hmm. A lot of agencies will be like, oh, it's no problem. You can totally write off the commute mileage. However, if this is January and you're not filing your taxes until next January or February, can you go the whole year with all of that gas money coming out of your pocket while you wait for tax season? And how far away do you need to be from the site to get that benefit? You know, there might be a situation where you're looking at three different Airbnbs. And, you know, I was just talking to a recruiter about assignment this week. And they were like, oh, well, they give you, you know, we're going to make sure that you get commuting mileage, you get mileage for it, but you have to live more than 30 miles from Mesa. So it would technically make sense for me to rent a hotel that was not my house in order to get the commuting benefit, in order to be able to rent a car for the time that I was doing the assignment. So making sure that you're taking that into account and knowing those details of how far out to rent a car, how far out to get the mileage benefit, when do I get that mileage benefit, and making sure that you're actually going to like get financial sense from this assignment. How much will it cost you to get there? And are they paying for any of that? So sometimes you pay your own way. Sometimes you'll get a stipend. And sometimes they'll pay to fly you out. During COVID, they were like, take the next flight to JFK and we will reimburse you for it. And that is no problem. Sometimes they're like, well, you know, take the cheapest flight you can and, you know, we'll get it to you on your first paycheck. Sometimes they're like, you know, we know the flights are $800, but here's $300. Hope it helps. And sometimes they say, we don't care how you get to the city. It's not coming out of our pocket. So best of luck. Also, what additional piece of information do they need? For a lot of hospitals, you're going to need CPR. A lot of them are going to require it. Additionally, a lot of these sites are going to require you to be fully vaccinated, including the most recent booster at the time. So if you do not have CPR or first aid, great time to get it. If you haven't been vaccinated or boosted yet and you want to start traveling, now would be the time to do it. A lot of them are waiting until you're done with your inoculation period after your most recent vaccine in order to be able to travel or work at a certain assignment.
fingerprint clearance card too?
Yeah, different states will require different things. A lot of times your license will include that fingerprint card or background mm-hmm. check, but knowing what that looks like, especially if you're someone who maybe has a history that has made it challenging to mm-hmm. get things like that in the past, it can present problems. You know, even if you've been licensed in Arizona for 20 years and we have given you 10 different fingerprint cards over that time, if you're now looking to travel in New York and you have that 15-year-old drug charge, that might be enough to cancel your assignment at the last mm-hmm. minute. So knowing those things, asking those things, bringing it up, hey, I have a history of this. Hey, I have this mark on my license. Is that going to be a problem? You know, mm-hmm. can we do anything about that in advance? Because you definitely don't want to quit your job, take exactly. time off, you know, board your pets, say goodbye to your loved ones, all for an assignment to be canceled at the last mm-hmm. minute. So travel social work can be an amazing and rewarding career, but please make sure you're ready for the challenge so you can make the right choices for yourself and your family.
And as always, resources for this episode are on our website, socialworkersbreakroom.com. And feel free to ask us any questions through our Instagram or our Facebook too. You can also connect with us on Facebook.
And if your joy is travel social work, we hope one day you'll do it.
See you next time.